This is the Dungeon Master Guys. Dungeon Master Guys.
Hello and welcome to our 8th episode, the last one of the year, the Christmas special. I'm Phil, the chatty DM, along with my partners in crime, Dave, the game chalker, and newbie DM. How you doing, guys?
Ho, 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 ho.
Merry Christmas, everybody. Ho, ho.
I really like how you took your time to get into your character, Dave.
It takes a while. I'm a method actor type.
I normally talk like this.
Of course. All right, so we're very bad Santas, which actually is a great scenario for Fiasco, which we'll discuss later. So today is our Christmas episode. We're moving away from our usual format of recorded segments with guests and several discussions, and we've decided to get around our mics and discuss great holiday gifts for RPGers. So we have our little lists. But first, I'd like to thank our sponsor, Obsidian Portal, who make this show possible.
Too many NPCs to manage? Players can't remember what happened at the last session? Wasting valuable game time flipping through your notebook trying to find some detail you wrote down months ago? Running a tabletop campaign is hard, but Obsidian Portal makes it easy. With Obsidian Portal, you can manage your tabletop RPG campaign online. Our tools let you track NPCs, locations, items, events, and every other detail for your game. Sign up for free at obsidianportal.com and use promo code DMGUYS to get a bonus.
All right, so we're all sitting, getting ready for Christmas. I guess that you guys are our total gamer last-minute people, so you haven't bought like any of your Christmas gifts, right?
This year I have Amazon Prime, so I just get everything within 2 days anyway, so it doesn't matter as much.
And I'm going to start any day now, although I have to be, you know, make haste because my wife's birthday is next week, so Christmas shopping and birthday shopping is at the same time. So let's start with our little Christmas list. I'm going to start off with... I would say my first choice for a Christmas gift would be the D&D Redbox. We talked a lot about it back in September and October when it got out, but I think it's a great gift to introduce D&D to new players, especially when there's someone around the new player to show them the wheels. As some of you know, I've got the box a little bit during Gen Con, and I got to play it with Nico, who's my 8-year-old son. And he had lots of fun discovering the game and bashing monsters and role-playing the hell out of the new powers that he had with his characters. You guys played with the Redbox yet?
I don't see it the way you see it, Chatty. I have to disagree with you. But then again, you're seeing it through your dad playing with his kid. And if that's the purpose that you're getting out of it, that's a good thing to use the Redbox as.
Yeah,
I was looking at it through the eyes of a DM with 5 players at a table, and it's just not a product that I think I would use to introduce a table full of new players to the game.
No, I agree with you. I agree with you. It's basically so that you would have one or two players, including a new DM, learning the game.
In that case, yeah. If you're sitting with your son, I mean, I think it's a fantastic game for you to play with your son. I would recommend it wholeheartedly. With a table full of players, not so much.
That makes a lot of sense. What about you, Dave?
It's got a lot of bits you can steal, even if you do have 5 players. It's not the best intro for that situation.
Yeah, okay, cool. My second choice would be Vincent Baker's Apocalypse World, which is an indie role-playing game that was published around the time that Gen Con came on. It's a post-apocalyptic game, of course. But what's very interesting about that particular game is that although... it was designed to be a science fiction game. When you remove the actual fluff of the game, you find one of the most solid GM toolbox I have ever discovered in the game. From everything that the GM should do when they react to player input to how to design sandbox type games and not over design your game. Everything is in that particular game to give you structure as a game master, to have more improv friendly dynamic games. Now, I'm not entirely sure that either of you guys have been exposed to that particular game, but I've played it a few times, and it's really awesome.
It sounds really cool. It's on my list for sure. I also think it's interesting that this is kind of the year of the post-apocalyptic games, which kind of scares me a bit.
Yeah, well, it's 2:10 to 11, so we're getting ready. Maybe it's going to ramp up more. Because of that 2:12, that 2:12 myth.
It's true. But we got Apocalypse World this year. We got Gamma World, which I'll talk about. We got Dark Sun, all kinds of wrecked world stuff.
Yeah.
When are we going to see a Mayan civilization role-playing game where you actually destroy the world? That's what I want to see. A bunch of Mayan Indians running around. That'd be cool.
That can be your sequel to RPG Kids. It'll be
Mayan Kids.
Mayan Kids.
Mayan Kids destroying the world.
Yeah, I'll get on it.
Virgin Sacrifice, the role-playing game.
Oh, yeah, I'll start it right now. Give me a second.
How else are your kids going to learn about Quetzalcoatl? I mean, really?
No, you're right. Absolutely.
I'm still trying to learn how to pronounce that damn name. My last choice, and as has gotten a lot of buzz in the role-playing circles, is definitively Fiasco, which is a one-session role-playing game slash board game. It's kind of hard to define, where you've got no game master, but you simulate one of those, you know, trouble movies. I think the game's tagline is ordinary people with powerful ambitions and low impulse control. So maybe you'd have an easier time describing it than I have, than I would, Dave.
Yeah, it really is hard game to encapsulate, and even the whole kind of Coen Brothers movie feel isn't necessarily every time you play in every play set. But it really does have a lot to offer, you know, if you and your players are willing to, you know, play a game where you're not rolling dice to resolve anything, where you're just describing, you're just in character, you're just making scenes. You know, it's a very good game for that, that also helps create the situation and connect all of you together and make all kinds of possibilities of things to work off of. It's kind of what's neat about it, you know, is it's like you get a complete story, you know, in 2 to 3 hours.
A completely insane story, usually, that will generate laughs and groans of agony.
Yeah. Well, it never ends well for the majority of players at the table, I would say.
Yes. And as you said, it's a complete game. It usually lasts like 30 minutes per players, and it plays from, what, 2 to 3 to 5 players. It's a great experience, and it's a rather inexpensive game. I think the PDF is about $10, and the book goes, what, 15, 20?
20 bucks.
And the website offers one extra playset, which is a full setting in which you can play a game every month. They've done that for the last 12 months.
The December one is really cool, too, by Logan Bonner, where it's like a D&D game after when they're trying to figure out who gets what treasure.
Oh, that's interesting. All right.
I had a chance to play the game. I played it once, and it got to the point where I didn't really understand what I was doing with the dice. I didn't really understand what the mechanics of the game were, but I really didn't care. I had so much fun just creating a story and just having fun with my character. That even if it was my turn to roll die, I really didn't care what happened. I didn't understand that whole side of the game, to be honest with you.
Well,
I was just having fun.
It's one of the barriers to entry to the game is that a lot of people are more focused mechanically and don't necessarily get the whole dice mechanic at start. They don't really know what a good ending or a good outcome or a bad outcome is for a given scene, which is what drives the color of the dice that you get. And they don't care if the story's very good, but if the story hasn't gotten off yet, it becomes a barrier to the game. That's what I've actually lived in the last game I played, but I've also realized that the players were too tired to actually enjoy it. So the old dice mechanic is probably a harder to understand concept for some types of players.
Ended up shooting a cop, setting a car on fire, killing a hooker, and walking away with a box of porno tapes. So I thought it was great fun.
That's perfect, yeah.
What else can you ask for?
It was a complete fiasco. So I had a fun time playing it. It was a great.
Yeah, so
great
time. I think it's one of my top new discoveries for this year, and I'm telling everyone they should get a copy of that. All right, I'm done with my list. What about you, Dave?
Well, my first one is actually a pretty recent release. It's the Leverage role-playing game. And this is one I've been talking about a lot, especially because it has the potential not just to, you know, running the games based on the TV show, which everyone might not be familiar with, you know, heist games, but its engine is really cool in what it does, and can be hacked into a lot of other games. But if you're a GM, and it's another game like Fiasco, where you can pretty much do everything in the span of 3 hours, including make the adventure, you know, explain the rules, make characters and whatnot, and play through an entire heist within a three-hour span. And
With no preemptive, you didn't prep anything before.
No prep whatsoever. They have these awesome tables in there that you can roll on and generate pretty much everything. And they're really well written. I mean, they're just like, you know, tables where you roll a D10, and they're all so solidly written. You know, by the time you get a combination, you've got a story. You know, it suggests itself really easily on, which is something
nice
that I found out yesterday, in fact.
It's an interesting trend that a lot of the newer RPGs actually make it easier and easier on the GMs to prepare the game. And I think it's a tribute to the fact that a lot of the game designers are nearing or right in the middle of their 30s with kids and whatnot, so they have no time to actually prep for their own games. So they'll put in the mechanics directly in the game themselves during the sessions. I've seen this in Mouse Guard. I've seen this in Free Market. You tell me that Leverage is about the same. Fiasco is about the same. Savage World, to a certain extent, if you want to play it improv heavy. So it's interesting.
Yeah, well, that's what I think is interesting about these games we're talking about specifically, is that you really don't have to be a great improv GM. You know, they give you these tools to run the games. Like the thing that I think is a really good takeaway for any GM who looks at Leverage will be this whole mechanic where if your players roll some ones, then you get to introduce new complications to, you know, to harry them to make their lives more difficult. So even if you were to just lift that mechanic into other games, it's like, this is where you don't just have to spitball and say, oh, then guards pop out, and then this happens, and this happens. You can actually say, okay, well, the dice tell me that this situation has to be more complicated, and you throw that at your players.
Instead of planning for trouble comes up, and then you just make it up as you go.
Mm-hmm.
That's cool.
Let me ask you something. How built into the game is the setting? Because I'm not familiar with Leverage at all. I mean, I know it's a show on TNT or whatever, but I've never really watched it. So if I were to pick up the game, how much about the show do I need to know before I understand what's going on?
It definitely helps to have seen it at least once or twice, but, you know, it's heist movie stuff. So if you've watched, you know, The Italian Job, Ocean's 11.
Gone in 60 Minutes.
Gone in 60 Seconds.
Yeah, sorry. The Canadian version's really boring.
It's a lot more polite. Even if you're familiar with that genre to an extent and about con artists and stuff, that helps quite a bit. You know, you won't get all the references and whatnot, but as I said, the system is so good for hacking. I mean, it's another thing that could be good for D&D-style stuff. You know, Inception is also another big one. Like, stuff like Firefly is also good. It just lends itself to a lot of different areas.
Yeah, well, I think it's correct me if I'm wrong, but the actual Leverage party could be conceived as being the modern equivalent to the D&D party. I mean, the roles are like modern / science fiction roles that you can transpose to a lot of different settings.
Yep. You just swap those in for leader, defender, controller, striker, and you know, you've got to start right there.
Yeah, because I think Leverage got a mastermind. What are the archetypes of Leverage characters?
It's hitter, hacker, thief, mastermind. Missing one, and grifter.
Grifter. So yeah, you probably have you cover a lot of gaming fiction and modern fiction in that. Yep. That's cool.
Anything you can boil down to a couple roles, you can port over.
All right. So what's your next game?
I'm also going to recommend the Dresden Files RPG, which came out earlier this year, which, again, is another license, although Dresden's something where I didn't really know it until the RPG was coming out. and then I started to read more of the books and that kind of thing and became a lot more familiar with it. But even aside from that, even if, again, if you're not a fan of...
It's an urban fantasy game,
urban fantasy, exactly. So it has a lot of good stuff just for stealing if you're interested in urban fantasy games. It's got a really cool city creation chapter where you kind of sit down and say, okay, well, here's the city where, you know, me and the players want to base our game. And then it's how to kind of mix, you know, create some threats and some potential allies and everything else, you know, kind of baked into the city, but, you know, with all these fantasy twists, and also suggest ways to tie characters to specific locations. And the character creation also ties all the characters to each other, but you sort of get this, you know, whole thing where everyone's tied together with the setting. So it gives you a lot of tools for, you know, making up adventures and stuff.
It's another of those games where party creation is done as a group, right?
Yep, that one's you really have to have the group to be able to create the party, because it actually affects your, you know, you make little kind of backstory stories that involve someone else in the party. And so part of your character actually comes from that, you know, part of your, they're called aspects, you know, one part of your personality that you can call upon for bonuses and whatnot comes from these dealings you've had with other party members.
Mm. Awesome.
So, yeah.
Playing the, did you play in the Gen Con game that was played? I know Jake, I know Phil, you're supposed to play in it.
Yeah, I wasn't it. With Melambus, yeah.
Yeah, Melambus ran a game at Gen Con. I was supposed to go watch, and I missed it for some reason. And it seems like an interesting game. He was showing me some of the stuff that he had prepared for it. Some of the character dossiers and the files and stuff. And it looked like a cool game.
The character archetypes was really cool, and he showed us the actual part where you write those little stories David were telling us about, where you would write a one or two sentence about something that happened not too long ago. Then we would all swap cards, and you would take someone else's story, and you would write where you were when you were seeing what was happening in that prior scene, and how you got involved in it, and that linked you to other characters. And I think we did that particular swap twice, and it was really cool.
Yep. That's a big part.
This was distilled into a advantages. There's a special term for that in the game, but basically you would take out one key word or one key phrase from each of those stories, and when those particular phrase or words came into the game, they gave you a bonus.
Yep, that's the aspects right there, which powers a lot of that system. And it's both just, you know, I can call upon it for a bonus if it fits in, but at the same time, the GM is always looking and saying, well, you know, you're impulsive, I'm going to compel you to do something impulsive unless you spend one of these points to resist it. So it's both, it's a back and forth, you know, you can call upon it for a bonus, but it can also get you into trouble.
Yeah. Hey, it's a very interesting game. It's a beautiful set of art cover books. And I don't know if it's still going on, but it's an Evil Rat production, right?
Yep.
So it's produced by Evil Rat Company, and if I remember, if you buy the art covers, you get the PDFs with them, right?
That's
a very, very nice gesture on the part of the producers.
Yep. And again, it's got two books in the core set. The first one is all the rules and whatnot, and the second one is more the setting a monster manual type stuff. So if you know nothing about Dresden Files, even if you just pick up just that first book, there's still tons you can take out of that.
I'm sure we're going to hear more and more of that game in the upcoming year.
Yep.
What's your last choice, man?
My final pick is Gamma World.
Of course.
Yep. Post-apocalyptic, wacky, fun based on 4E D&D. I got to play a playtest back in January. And ever since then, I was like, and I had no prior experience with the game. You know, it's a game that's been around since the 70s in various editions. I had no connection to it whatsoever. It was kind of blasé. And then I sat down and played it, and they've managed to pack in so much just random fun into it. You know, the way that you're drawing cards that have all these mutations and these crazy inventions that, you know, can kind of backfire, and all these elements just come together. And they've really streamlined the 4E D&D stuff. They've picked out a lot of parts that I'm not as much of a fan of, and also makes it so it's easier to run as a result. And I just think it's a great package. You know, it's like a $40 box set, gives you absolutely everything you need. You know, there's optional stuff you can add on to it, but for this $40, it's a great investment for a game that's everything except the dice, you know?
I gave the game an unfair assessment after playing it only once and reading it over. But the more I read about the stuff you've been doing with your game, with your Maryland area game, the more I see that the game's been simplified enough so that you can add all those concepts from other modern games, that especially the how to design your adventures, how to share narrative and stuff like that, that really makes me want to play it really bad. Maybe not GM it so much, but I'd love to play it.
One of the things that's turning me off about it, and correct me if I'm wrong, is kind of like the perceived silliness of the game. Like, I think people assume that the game has to be a silly game out of the box. Is that your experience with it, or can you make it a more serious experience if that's what you're looking for?
Here's my question back to you. Why do you need to make it serious?
In my case, because I'm just not... I don't know if I'm too crazy about that whole, you know, walking puff bunnies with or giant cockroaches or whatever. I don't know.
Is it because you would want to play a post-app game with the 4E rules but don't want the silliness, or you'd be willing to play that genre with another RPG?
That might be it. I may want to play using the rules I know in that type of post-apocalyptic thing without the silliness. That you may have nailed it on the head.
Yeah. So I understand what you mean. But right now, Gamma World does not go for that. Gamma World tries to be true to at least one of its earliest the versions I used to know, which the monsters were silly, the characters were all mixed up from charts and were either you couldn't play with them or they were really weird. But right now, they just fix the fact that it's still random, but it looks to be highly playable.
Yeah, it's one of those things where I've certainly heard that complaint before, but it's one where I just got to tell people you just got to try it. I mean, you know, you can get plenty of seriousness in D&D already, and you know, you can give it these other flavors, but there's just so much cool and fun stuff that happens just by playing it. Like, it's not even something that you have to force into it, or you know, the DM has to like say, oh look, these are Wacky Rabbit Man. You know, like, just the way your characters are and the characters you come up with and what happens during the game sort of creates a lot of fun.
Yeah, and I'll challenge the conservative player in you, newbie, because I've played D&D with you, and you're no way near a serious D&D player. I mean, you like silly games. You like silly voices. You like to have, you know, people exploding and laugh around the table. I mean, Gamma World's pretty much that.
I think it's a game I got to try before I judge it. That's why I haven't, you know, I've read it. I've read the game. I haven't reviewed it because I haven't played it, and I don't think it's a fair thing to do to review it without playing it. But I don't know. I don't have my. I'm not sure how I feel about it yet. And I guess I gotta try it.
I'll go even
further. It needs to be tried from both sides of the game. If you're a GM, you need to play it and you need to GM it, because I've GM'd it, or I haven't played it yet, and I feel I can't give it a fair assessment yet.
I do think it takes a strong GM to DM that game. Because to create the kind of experience that the game suggests.
I think it's even easier to run than D&D, like, flat out. I think there's not as many of the sort of gotchas that can come up in D&D, and it's, you know, as I said, it's not like you have to force the silliness as a GM. Like, it's just going to happen as a result of the stuff going on. So we got to get you guys in a game. I think playing it will tell you what you need to know.
That's my New Year's resolution, is to try play a game of Gamma World.
There we go.
Yeah.
We can make that happen.
Well, all right. You'll need to fly to PAX East.
Well, that's my second. Then I need a second New Year's resolution.
Yeah. All right. So we're done with Dave's suggestions. What about yours, newbie?
All right. I am going to start with one of my favorite D&D products of the year, the Monster Vault, the Essentials Monster Vault.
It's a nice box.
It really is. I said it the other day. I said if D&D 4E had launched as the way Essentials has launched, I think it would have gotten a whole fair shake from people, and a whole lot more 3.5 players would have bought into the system. I think the presentation alone has been greatly improved over the original hardcovers. And the Monster Vault is a fantastic product. The monsters have been updated from the 2008 Monster Manual. Mm-hmm. The monster tokens are fantastic. I'm a big fan of tokens, so I might be a little biased, but.
And I think what the box also has maps and adventure and
piles of tokens.
Like 10 sheets of tokens.
It brings, I'm not sure how many sheets, maybe around 10. It brings an adventure called Cairn of the Witch, the Winter King.
Winter King. Yeah.
And it brings.
Go ahead.
It brings a few rings that you can create huge tokens out of large ones for the table, because certain monsters have different sizes to them. And I don't know. The fluff, it's worth noting that the fluff that's written into the book. Is heck of a lot more interesting than the stuff in the original Monster Manual.
Well, I think they backpedaled from what they did, with the decision they took in 4E, and they decided to add more context of the monsters in a game world the D&D game world that's been around for 30 years.
Which was badly needed in 4E, because a lot of players were turned off by the fact that the monsters were just a stat block and a few knowledge checks, and that was it.
Yeah.
Regardless of what was in the past, the actual product is great.
I'm not sure I agree in general about essentials being, you know, having been the right thing, like, to have done in the first place, but Monster Vault, you know, like, yeah, I wish that book had been instead of the original Monster Manual in a lot of ways, but, you know, we're seeing the result of like 2.5 years of playtesting of everything,
yes,
you know, to be able to come up. But it really is, you know, like that and Monster Manual 3 and Demonomicon are pretty much the only monster books I need and can really use for my campaign now.
Mm. Yeah, I wouldn't go back to some of the older books. Hopefully a lot of the monsters get updated in whatever new version of online monster support we get from now on.
Leads me to the second set of books.
Yes.
Because I wouldn't go back to the original Player's Handbook either. Because now we have the two essential Player's books, the Heroes of the Fallen Lands and the Heroes of the Forgotten Kingdoms, which I think, as an introductory product for 4E players, I think it is a great set of books for players. It builds on new classes. It harkens back to the past with some classes, like, you know, it introduces a Cavalier to 4E, for example, and which is a build of a paladin, and it limits, and some people might say that limits is a bad word, but it limits all the options that maybe players had when 4E first launched for characters. I don't know if I'm explaining myself right, but it kind of makes
it introduces more focus.
Yes, they're more focused builds. Classes, yes, and it's easier for new players to create characters and not get so overwhelmed with how many choices they have,
or even more experienced players that do not necessarily like to have so many choices.
And the martial character, the martial classes were revamped. They took out the daily powers, for example, and they made them more martial.
Yeah,
which and, is the part I dislike, but I see its benefit in some ways.
I find them to be a nice set of books. I'm thinking from the point of view of a new player now. And I like what they did with the races, where they added benefit. They added a second ability score to the races. So now that, like, a dwarf, for example, is strength, con, or wisdom.
Yeah.
And I think they're nice books. They introduce enough. You could run a whole campaign using just the essentials products, and you wouldn't be missing out on anything.
I played a lot of games of low level games with the new classes at the New York Comic Con. And I really like the feel, the simplified feel of the classes. The classes were as powerful. They could take down, you know, dragons and monsters a few levels higher than they were. But their powers were a lot easier to grok for new players or even players who return to the game. And it made for a fun experience. A lot of the annoying, the core example I'll use is that those encounter powers that when you miss, you lose them. Well, a lot of the classes, the low-level encounter powers are not like that anymore because you trigger them once you hit. So their triggered powers, once you hit, you do more damage. Once you hit, you do that, which I found really interesting.
Got the basic melee attack now.
Yes.
Like the thief, his at-wills are all stances, or tricks are called, I believe, tricks.
Yeah.
So he hits with the basic melee attack, and then he can perform a trick, which is the at-will that's associated to that melee basic attack. I played a thief in an online game, and I thought it was a really cool class, actually. I enjoyed playing it.
Okay, what about your third product?
My third product is a non-D&D game. It is a box set, and it is Dragon Age.
Oh, it's so on my list of games I want to try in the next year.
I'm a big fan of the video game, and I picked up the PDF of the Dragon Age box set, and it is pretty fantastic. I really, really liked it, and I'm picking up the box set as soon as I can, the physical copy, because it is a great product. It is a Green Ronin game written by Chris Promise, I believe, and it's clearly influenced by the old D&D box sets, the basic set and the expert set, and companion set and all that, and the Beckme sets, as they're called. The first Dragon Age box set is an introductory set that I believe it's levels 1 through 5. Correct me if I'm wrong, Dave.
That sounds right, yeah.
Yeah, it's levels 1 through 5. And it brings two books, a DM's book, a player's book. It brings a map of the world. And it is a
3D6.
And a 3D6. It is a six-sided die-based game. All the actions in the game are resolved with 3D6, one of those die being the dragon die. And it is an interesting mechanic, and the game setting, I find it to be really cool. It's a fantasy setting, dark fantasy, but it sort of spins off into a different direction. Like, it has the fantasy tropes, but it sort of spins them a little bit on their head. And a lot of the game is based on morality, making your players have difficult moral choices to make throughout the game, throughout the campaign. And it's a very interesting game. It's a very cool game. And I'm dying. I haven't played it yet, but I'm dying to sit down and play it. I actually bought the DM screen the other day, which brings an adventure for it. And I may be running a game now in December at the end of the month. So we'll see what happens.
I haven't played the video game nor read anything about in the book, the box set itself. But I've heard that the stunt mechanics of the game are pretty interesting. I'm not entirely sure what they represent, but I guess that you get to create moves on the fly.
You have stunt points that you can spend, and when you roll certain die, you can spend them and cause certain stunts to happen. Like, you could knock an opponent prone, for example, is one of them. And they also have spell stunts for the wizard class. And it's a cool mechanic. Again, I haven't seen it in action because I haven't played the game, so all this is I'm basing it off my reading of the game. But believe me, it's one of those games that I'm dying to sit down and play it as soon as I can.
I've played it, actually. I own the box set. And yeah, it is, I mean, for the stunt stuff, you sort of take, you know, like in 4E, you'd have a specific power that would push somebody or knock somebody prone. Mm-hmm. Instead, there's just a random chance you get these stunt points, you get a certain amount, and you can use this to do certain things like increase damage, knock prone, push them around the map, that kind of thing. And so it's a bit more dynamic. It moves a lot quicker than some other games in combat. And the whole thing is pretty streamlined. You know, there's a fair amount of looking up stuff in the book because, you know, you need a chart to be able to tell you, like, what all the stunts you can do or what your spells do, that kind of thing. But overall, it's a pretty fast-running system in a really cool world. I mean, their take on dwarves, especially in Dragon Age, I loved it in the video game. I think it's the best take on fantasy dwarves possibly ever. And it carries through into the role-playing game really well.
Oh, man, I really want to see that. So whoever's listening, I want that as a Christmas gift.
What I like about it, guys, is that you can have an encounter. You can have a fight. And then as a DM, you can choose how complex you want to make it. You could choose to bring out the battle mat and draw your map and use your minis. Or you could choose to abstract the fight completely. It's really up to you. The game gives you the option of how complex you want to make the fight. So if you want to save the battle mat for the last guy at the end of the night, you could do that. And you could just abstract all the fights, basically.
And you've got the appropriate tools to do it.
You can make it as tactical as you want or as less tactical as you want, which is a really cool option for those parties that maybe have tactical players mixed in with non-tactical players. You can give a little bit of both, best of both worlds to your party. It's a neat, right. neat game.
So we just shared with you 9 of our favorite RPG products from the last year, which we suggest would make for great holiday gifts or stuff you should pick up to play in the upcoming months. They were the D&D Redbox, Apocalypse World, Fiasco, the Leverage role-playing game, the Dresden Files role-playing game, Scammer World, the D&D Essentials Monsters Vault, D&D Essentials Players Books, both of them, and the Dragon Age box set game. We'll put links to all of those products on our website, and we also invite you to share with us your favorite picks for this year for the holidays. So, guys, I want to wish you a happy holiday season. I wish you good games and great gifts.
You as well.
Sir, I want to wish everybody. I want to thank everybody out there. Give everybody a big happy holiday. Days, Merry Christmas, whatever you celebrate. Have a good one. Don't drink and drive.
Yes.
And, get a lot of holiday games in.
We'll be back in January with our regular show. So that's why we want you to send us your questions either through email or by phone. What are the contact informations again?
You can call the voicemail at 305-349-3026. That's 305-349-3026. Make sure to let us know it's for the DM Guys podcast.
Or drop us an email to dmg@critical-hits.com.
I also want to thank our sponsor, Obsidian Portal, who helped us make this show a reality. I'm Phil, the chatty DM, along with Dave and newbie DM, who wish you a great holiday season and look forward to talk to you again next year.